Several years ago, I could not have predicted that I would feel as positive about the church as I do today. Months before they left, a number of prominent people were expressing concern over problems that they had predicted would happen. They never happened. We still keep the Sabbath. We oppose the concept of the Trinity. And it so happens from long-range planning that the church is in the process of completing its booklet that exposes the fallacy of the Trinity. We still keep Passover. We still believe in a paid ministry. We believe in cost-effective television. We understand the shortcomings of Protestantism. That's a new charge. And we understand that God does not ask anyone to oppose a work against his church when doctrine is not the issue. I had been concerned with undue criticism against our duly appointed leaders in the past, as well as past policies that limited our opportunity to do a work of preaching the gospel. But perspective changes things. You know, perspective changes your view of certain prophecy matters, and we'll look at some of that at the end in Revelation 10 and 11, events that would happen prior to the return of the emergence of the two witnesses. But when you look back at the last number of years, I had thought in the past, oh, if we just had the perfect president and the perfect council of elders, and if we did, they would have dealt with some of the problems that were going on, but they would have never even remotely begun to deal with all. But the way circumstances have unfolded, even though I feel terrible for people that are caught in the middle or confused or don't know really how to sort things out in the last year or whatever, I really think that there's been a catharsis, a cleansing, as there has been in previous years, and it poises us for unity that we have never could only dream about in the past, a unity that is complete and dynamic and exciting. I can tell you that the people at the home office love to be there, and they are thrilled with all the other people that are there. Everybody's pulling in the same direction. I don't want to come across as some naive Pollyanna that just is spouting some party line and that I'm compelled to say that because of external circumstances. Nobody asked me to say that. But it really is a change. It was that a number of the people there would, there was a circle of people at the office that would fast on a regular basis, knowing that things needed to be rectified. I was one that would pray, God, this is your church, and it's got your name on it, and I don't know what else to do. I'm holding you responsible. Sometimes you have to do that. But it really didn't revolve around my strength. I'm a piece of dust. But with enough people asking, God was probably saying, yes, I know, I hear you, I don't agree with all the whatever disunity there might be, but not yet. Let's keep it up. Let's allow the trials to happen. Will people be loyal under certain circumstances? Okay, now if I turn up the heat, will they still be loyal? Okay, I'll turn it up. He has to test people. He has to. I feel like we've idled to neutral for 16 years, and now it's just we're going to take off. I think that we're going to shift into warp speed. I think so because every time in the history of the church, whenever you've gotten unity again reestablished among the leadership, you always have growth. In 1974, we saw our first major defection. 4,000 people and a cluster of ministers left. I had a ringside seat for it. I'll never forget it. And when that happened, right after that, the church started to grow at 30% income per annual income. Not for a long time did it, but it did for a little while, and all those people that disappeared were replaced. That is very, very serious. And then in 1978, when Mr. Armstrong had the heart attack, and he came back, when he did that, then the church started to grow. We became number one on television. And we also had, in addition to that, hundreds of TV stations. And we ended up with visit requests that were challenging us. 100 visits request a month. and in some places, New York City, Baltimore, 200 a month. I was asking myself, something's got to give. What's going to happen? What is going to happen now? How can we keep up with such a thing? And then Mr. Armstrong died. And after his death, there was a crescendo of response with the Mystery of the Ages. And then the leadership started siphoning, reducing the amount of money that the TV department could work with. And our sermonette man could talk about it in exacting detail. And it was difficult. They kept landing on their feet with less and less money. It was, what, 20 to 24 million a year? And then it was down to zero as others tried to kill the telecast. And we're successful. And from that point on, it's been very difficult for us to have the growth that we've had, wanted to have, that we dreamed of having, that we had in the 1980s when we were number one had on TV and had the largest mass circulation magazine outside of Reader's Digest in the world. It's not accidental that that kind of response, that kind of growth occurred. And it's not going to be accidental that if you have unity at the top, and you have people all pulling in the same direction, that you can't have that happen again. By their fruits you shall know them. It's exciting what's happened in the last 2 months. Breathtaking. Things are changing. For the first time in years, the WGN is setting a record of cost effectiveness. It's under $10 a time. Sometimes I think $8.51 was the lowest. Five times it's been under $10 a response. Back in 30 years ago, we were thinking if you could get a response of $5 a person, that was exceptional. And the church was able to do that. But when you factor in inflation, the cost per response by comparison is $2.50 to $3. It would be clearly under what it was in the days of our former association. So WGN as a superstation has been very effective for us. And one thing that thrills me is the fact that even though there's been a dip in income, putting our money where our mouth is, the church, Mr. Aaron Dean, the treasurer, and all the people there in the home office agreed we will spend the same money this year as we'd spent last year on media. And as a result, the overall percentage compared to income is 31%. We never, ever had any percentage close to that. But that's faith. That's saying that is our most important need. Instead of giving lip service to preaching the gospel as well as preparing a people, we're actually doing it. They're looking for TV time on the West Coast. Yes, you can watch WGN at 5:30 on Sunday morning, and some do and request things. And we figured that that's because they don't go to sleep Saturday night. They're still up to be able to watch the program. But if we're getting this kind of response here and we're building up the audience, why not do that on the West Coast? That's critically important for us to be able to reach as many people as possible. Because I think, and we have to be thinking this way, we may not have a whole lot of time. It may be a short work to finally have a crescendo, finally, before circumstances work against us in the form of persecution and intolerance. When the day comes that people will seek the truth running to and fro in Amos 8:11 and not be able to find it. That the time is now and the sense of urgency is now. We have a good news subscription rate that is growing again. Our former leadership tried to, they reduced the readership from 600,000 subscribers down to 300,000. Now it's back to 350,000. The renewal rate is 6.5% and growing as we are sitting here. The income took an $8 million hit, as estimated back in January and December, and not a total surprise, but that meant that our annual budget would be down to about $15 million. Now, it dropped, bottomed out in February, and it's increased in March. We don't have April yet. Expect it to continue. We are finding that there are even other Churches of God groups that are donating money out of sympathy and concern to us. But aside from that, there are co-workers and donors being developed by the WGN telecast. And in the Internet, you can't discount any of these vehicles. But 31% of the annual budget, that's significant. Back in 1996, I remember we had a proposal in the General Council, Conference of Elders, to try to get it to at least 25%. I was one that was frustrated and when it didn't happen. I didn't get all my relatives to crank up protests on the internet. We just figured, well, God will work it out later on, perhaps. And so we have now visit requests, new visitors. I visited a family in Miami not that long ago. They hadn't read any literature, but they loved the telecast. That was their contact. I was supposed to be there for a half an hour, and I was there for 4.5 hours. And we were talking about everything from the second resurrection to the plan of salvation, the holy days. They already were persuaded about the Sabbath and tithing and things like that. They brought those things up and yet had a lot of questions. Knew the Bible fairly well. When you invite somebody to church or when you visit, it doesn't mean they're just, it translates into church membership, but you never know. And for, we don't, what would be interesting for us to finally ascertain is for every person that calls and says, I would like to come to your church or whatever, and the doors is open, how many thousands of people does that represent? How many thousands of other people know and may call later, may be part of a large number of visit requests down the road? We don't know that. I remember one time I made a comment on public access TV. I didn't realize it was on television. And we were down at the courthouse. And 4 people during the next week said, hey, I saw you on television. And I asked somebody in the media market, I said, what does that mean? He said, for everybody that said that, that meant there were 10,000 other people that saw the program. 40,000. So you never know. The specifics, it's more difficult for us to determine where a response comes from because it could be internet, it could be TV, it could be a magazine. But it's nice to see these kind of statistics. Unity, I say, at the home office, and I'm thrilled with the approach that the leadership took because we have a budget of $15 million, and they've said, okay, we are going to spend at 16, if we're, looks like we'll have 15, we're going to spend at 16. We're going to allow an element of faith, like Mr. Armstrong, not maybe in the same way. There was a time when he was in Philadelphia, and he was meeting with different people. That was back when they would borrow money and then repay it back, which doesn't seem to make sense now. But at least he did it, not to second-guess his motive, but when the investors and bankers asked him, how many plain truths do you want, Mr. Armstrong? How many congregations are you after? How many TV stations? He says, it's got to increase. And then he said something in front of everybody. We're going to skate on the edge of financial disaster. And they looked at him, and they still approved the loan. We don't recommend that, not in today's, with today's elements in the economy. But since they have made that commitment, and there's still $4 million in reserves, that dispels another rumor that there aren't any, the income in March went up a couple percentage points. So it may be that if it's like the other times in our recent history, that we're going to see even that faith line met and maybe exceeded and give them more opportunity to do more of a work. Mr. Kubik said, I love to come to the home office. He says, back in December and January, it would look pretty grim. He said, I come and I say hi to Aaron Dean and I say hi to Aaron Booth and then there's Gerald Selig and there's the different people he named. He says, and everybody's happy. And we then somebody said, does this mean you come into the office late every day? And then he laughed. He says, well, no, that's not really true. But it melted away the bad memories of some of the attrition. And he said, I was the only one left in ministerial services. And it was hard when these resignations kept coming in day after day. Well, that wasn't a surprise, but just what would be the full extent? And then to see people step up and do things. One person ended up being hired in South Africa because he was very, very valuable, and he knew his Bible. And then it turned out that a number of other countries survived intact. In Hong Kong, and all of our people there, most of them the Philippines, Indonesia intact, India, where we'll have a feast this year, and most of the brethren in South Africa are with the church, and all of them in Europe solidly with the church, all of them in Australia with the church. Not so much New Zealand, the leadership left, but half are behind the United. And so in those areas where there's representation, there have been other people that were leaders and people that have done a lot more. And there are people here that are doing more than they've ever done. And I think that's wonderful. It's significant. And it shows that a number of us, and maybe all of us, can be on the front line in helping to do a work before the end. Instead of being shelved and shunted aside, people be utilized at all ages. And not just some gimmick, some psychological gimmick to give somebody ownership, but to really make a difference at any age. We've got ministers that are writing what used to be the letter answering correspondence program, where people would have questions over the literature they were reading, and they would have maybe things that were not addressed directly in the booklet. And so they would ask for some follow-up. And a team of ministers have taken time to write answers. But they're saying, hey, you know, the stack of questions is rising. We need more help. We need more. Well, another reason is that they have multiple churches and maybe a country on the side to look after. And the work's getting done. A few people have come out of retirement. They've hired a number of people. We have filled up all the holes, so to speak. But that's just to hold our own. And we're trying to stimulate for growth at 31% of our income in sowing seeds, sowing seeds, sowing seeds. So something's got to give. We have to have more people do it. Why can't members do that? Why can't people say, I'll help, as some have done with speaking and other things. I'll be able to. And how about articles? Why couldn't a teenager in this room or somebody that's retired write an article for the Good News magazine or anything? Does that mean it'll be published? It might mean that maybe Scott Ashley says, hey, this is a great idea. Let me tweak it a little bit, and then we'll be co-authors of it. Or maybe it'll be perfect the way it is. But we just don't have, you know, a lot of excess of material. We have many publications. We've got Vertical Thought and other things. And people can make a difference. So if you want to come out of the doldrums and get out of a comfort zone, you might make a difference for some other people. We're going to have public Bible lectures all across this country on September the 10th. And invite an increasing readership and people off the telecast. And we want people to know that there is a church associated with the telecast. And so down in San Antonio just recently, the TV department went down there and filmed Gary Petty. And that's part of a future series of programs. And part of the program will be him speaking to the congregation. And that should generate some more interest in the audience as to people wanting to come to church. And when they do, I always want to ask now that we remember that this isn't just our own little secret, happy social circle. It's wonderful to socialize. But those people may welcome your friendship, and you might be avail yourselves to answer questions that they might have. I remember when I came into the church, I had hundreds of questions, and I asked anybody that I talked to. And I found out that some people knew the answers and others did not. But it's easy for us to lock in on our own circle of friends or whatever, but show yourself friendly. We need to do that and incorporate people into the family of God, those that God sends our way. And that's very important. And on these public Bible lectures, I can remember Dean Wilson saying, you know, when he says, when I give a public Bible lecture, all the unusual people get me cornered, and all the really solid people are talking to the brethren. And I'll never forget doing the public Bible lecture one time in Tampa, and poured my heart out, talked about prophecy and all these things that are going to happen. And you talk about feedback. Somebody came up and says, wow, that was great. That was great. Now, you seem to know a lot about the prophecies, so maybe you can help me. Do I at this point and put all my money, sink it into penny stocks? Or do I sell that and get it into real estate? I says, come on, you know, I don't know that. No. You know the prophecies. So you're just holding out on me. Do we get into real estate or do we go for the commodities and gold and things like that? And I had to beg out of it. Well, that took up 15 minutes of valuable time. And the other people, I hope they got to talk to some of the brethren, because otherwise they could slip through the cracks. And if they didn't want to be there, that's one thing. But if they had the opportunity to learn more, or we could make a difference for them, then it would be a tragedy to have spent the money to have the event and invite them and then to not be able to connect with them. So on September the 10th, worth praying about, that we're going to do that. We feel confident enough that we can do that in all markets. My question for Miami is, do we do it in English or in Spanish? Now, if it's in Spanish, you know, that throws me out of a comfort zone, I can tell you very honestly and frankly, but you do what has to be done. You know, kiss comfort zones goodbye as we start to become more famous. And God blesses unity. He does. And we sang about that. And I had that as my first scripture here. I'll turn over there, and you don't have to if you can remember how you sang the hymn. Psalm 133 says, behold, how good and pleasant it is for brethren to dwell together in unity. Everybody going in the same direction, pulling the same way. It's been used, the example of these hitching teams, and you know, the county fairs that dot the land, and you could have a horse that would be pulling. It's almost cruel to put an animal through this, because they'd strain. But when one horse could pull 8,000 pounds of dead weight on a sled over the grass, and another horse would pull 7,000. So when you hitched them together, would they pull 8 plus 7, 15,000? How many think that there would be more than that? Yeah, a lot more. It could be up to 20,000. Synergy, when you're working together and pulling the same direction instead of going in opposite directions, or even pointed in the same way but not being in sync. That's the difference between now and a year ago. That's what it's like in the home office. And you are welcome to go up there and find out if I'm making this all up or if it's for real. It's wonderful that the people that are there are thrilled to be there. And there are times when they have to make far-reaching decisions. And then also is not some gimmick, paid political nonsense. But there have been times, especially in the early days in December and January, but on a consistent basis, the leadership has no qualms about going into Mr. Luker's office and everybody getting on their knees for maybe a long time and knowing that they are just dust. They can't do anything of themselves. John 15:5, you can do nothing, it says, and that applies to all of us. We're like grass that fades, as James says in Isaiah. Here, and then a few years go by, and we faded. And that's the way the human existence is on one level. Without God's Spirit. And so how can any of us be pompous and think that we're a bunch of strutting peacocks that are God's gift and think that we know everything? It's the people that get on their knees, or if they can't kneel, that cry out one way or another and say, God, we have a work to do, and we have to have your help to make it happen. You say that we're to go to take the gospel to the world. You say that in Matthew 24:14 and Matthew 28:18-20. You say that we're putting our money out there. We're trying to sow the seed, but you've got to help us and to help us to make the right decisions in different areas. And they've done that a lot. And it's what you would hope for at the top. People that know that they are but dust. And if one person can't do something, that somebody else can be brought in and do it, and then everybody just is in total harmony with that. With one thing that passed on this meeting that we had, the council, was that if a person is an officer of the church, president or treasurer, whatever, that person cannot be on the council. That way, otherwise you have yourself answering to yourself if you're on both. That was the feeling overwhelming feeling of the GCE. So that meant that Aaron Dean is no longer on the council, and I'll think of it later, somebody else. But it's like, no big deal. We're all friends. We're working together. It doesn't really matter. For the first time, I didn't care who got elected on the Council of Elders. I never would have thought that I'd say that 3 years ago or 5 years ago or 15 years ago. It's just so different. It's a breath of fresh air. Good things happen when that occurs. And the question I have today is, what does God, this unity mean to you? God is blessing the unity. He always blesses unity. He did in the 70s when things turned around, in the 80s. And I could say when things turned around, 31 AD, in other years, in the past, in the history of God's church, there were ups and downs all over the place. You can graph it out over the 2,000 years. Things really skyrocketed by comparison with Peter Waldo in 1170 AD. And then it dwindled. It crescendoed in the early 1800s, late 1700s, in various congregations in Connecticut, New Jersey, New York City, the fledgling Church of God in North America. And so as often, for example, God will always want to live where there is a pure environment. When a person repents at baptism, they're clean. And God, that's when the impregnation of God's Holy Spirit occurs. When Moses was in front of God, he said, Moses, take your shoes off. This is holy ground. God dwells in a clean environment like that. He dwells in a unified environment. We see the hand of God more at work when the people are all together. And this is why unity is so valuable and why we can appreciate it when we've seen times when we did not have that. Things go our way better. You're familiar with the Middle Eastern prophecy ad that we ran in England. This was in the London Daily Telegraph. It was going to be on page 40 or page 50 because that's all we could afford. Instead, this is a picture of the London Daily Telegraph, and they put it on the front page right over here. I think many of you know that. What are the odds of that happening? What kind of money does it cost to put an ad on a booklet and religious in a secular country on the front page of a London newspaper that's fairly well respected? It's a miracle. But it was on the Middle Eastern Bible prophecy, coinciding with the events going on in Tunisia and Egypt and Libya that were dominating the news, and so the editors decided to incorporate this on the front page. The church has just renewed the contract for WGN. And they were telling us it was another miracle that we got that at the time that we did. And now we've got 2 more years at the same price. You don't want to take that for granted, but I almost think like, well, of course, in this environment with this team, I would expect things like that. So I have to think that we can learn from the past. And where we have seen things turn around, we can be excited that they will turn around again. In Psalm 39, verse 5, turn there if you wish, Psalm 39, verse 5, was a statement that I think is reflected as far as the understanding among everybody that I got to talk to at the home office. I can think of other years where I knew that everybody wasn't on the same page. Back in the 70s, even in the early 80s, even when the church was making some wonderful progress, I know that we had situations in which there were people pushing a different envelope secretly. And all the things that were on the drawing board in the mid-70s came out in the mid-90s. But in Psalm 39, verse 5, one of the best steps, along with consistent prayer and study and fasting, to maintain an anchor with God Himself, is Psalm 39, 5, where David wrote in candid honesty, he says, "Behold, you've made my days as a handbreadth, and mine ages as nothing before you. Verily, verily, in every man at his best state is altogether vanity." If you believe Psalm 39, verse 5, you're not going to have an inordinate opinion of oneself, because then that gets into pride, and God resists pride. and so do other people. Pride is the enemy. And some of the people have been ordained as ministers for 50 years were reflecting that they knew people 20, 30, 40 years ago that had great promise, and a lot of intelligence, but they got caught up in pride and they lost their bearings. Very dangerous, but not needed, not necessary for that to happen to anybody. Let's never forget that God is more determined than we are to be able to complete the work as he wishes, as he's outlined and prophesied. Isaiah 55 and verse 11, 10 and 11, talk about that. It says in verse 10, Isaiah 55, "For as the rain comes down and the snow from heaven, and returns not there, but waters the earth, and makes it to bring forth and bud, it may give seed to the sower and bread to the eater. So shall my word be that goes forth out of my mouth. It shall not return to me void, but it shall accomplish that which I please, and it shall prosper in the thing whereto I sent it." When God has his mind made up to do something, it will get done, whether it's by stones, by us, or others, depends on our approach, our attitude, our candid view of ourselves, and knowing our and our willingness to yield to whatever God can do with us. Isaiah 46 in verse 9 and 10. Again, the determination of God to complete his work. "Remember the former things of old," he says, "for I am God," God states, "and there is none else. I am God, and there is none like me. Declaring the end from the beginning and from ancient times of things that are not yet done, saying, my counsel shall stand. I will do my pleasure." That's God speaking. And so when he says that there will be an end time work, he does intend it to happen. And I think that before he could do that, he had to be sure about people. Could people stay the course in a climate of uncertainty at times or some adversity? Could they put God first no matter what? Not just when times are easy. I think of some of the leadership and people that have been shunted aside and discredited in the past 10 to 15 years. And now God, I think, has learned all that he needs to know. I may be wrong, I mean, about us in this phase. Regardless, he will get things done the way he wants. And if we can be in harmony with it, God can use us to do things that we've never done in the past. There's a lot going on. We're bringing back the concept that was unpopular with some in 2002, Christ's servant-centered leadership. It's going to be called by a different caption, "Serving as Christ would serve." It's become the new motto of the church. For the minister, that means that each minister should know, I think that's true, you're not here because I'm here. I'm here because you're here. Ministry is to serve the people. The people come first. The people are what is the church. The idea of elitism and all should be shot to smithereens. It's not about that. It's about doing a work. It's about doing the right things for the right reasons. And I don't think that's a tough concept for anybody here to understand. But people want to live that. Mr. Kubik was saying, you know, we had some negative thing break out the home office. Just somebody was upset with something else. And I said, oh, we got to stop that. We got to nip that in the bud because it is so good now. And so they did. And it was just an oversight. It's just there's a real desire to, now that we've got the right people in the right slots, I know there's critics that would take issue with me on that, but you watch the results. I'm excited, then things can happen. I'm excited just again what's happened in the last few months. Even though this looks kind of brief, here is the backside of a United News. And since the beginning of the year, people that have gone on the internet to watch YouTube to watch the telecast, it's 1.6 million people. Now that could create some, even if at the tiniest percentage of that number decides they want a visit request or they want to come here or whatever, that changes the dynamics considerably. And we know that that's going to increase, and we're going to make it increase by spending more money and more than that praying, hopefully our hearts out, that God will bless our efforts. We've got frequently asked questions about the Bible. How many people have gone to that? 939,000 hits. People that have clicked onto the website generated by email campaigns. 552,000 people. People can go to Apple Bookstore and download booklets for free. That's even advertised. That's happened 66,000 times. We're talking about huge numbers that could get much bigger. And as they do, the question is, how do we handle it? How many more people can do more things? How many more people could I or somebody look to? Can you go visit so-and-so? I'd have you come with me to visit other people, but we just are behind. Can't you do that? Why couldn't people that have been in for some time be able to do that? If we're hazy on our doctrine and all, maybe this is a time to review it and understand it. And maybe you say, well, I'm a young person, I can't. Well, maybe that's exactly who we need to talk to and connect with somebody else that's your age. They had one of the work sessions was on the different generations. And you have the Bob Hope generation, you have the baby boomers, you have Generation X and Generation Y. And there are similarities to all four, and there are differences. And advertisers know that if they want to target and connect with a particular audience, they have to speak in the language and the parameters of that audience. Therefore, for some of these generations, individualism is strong, and for others, it's not. They tend to think more, how does the group think? And that's even true traditionally in various countries. Japan, for example, has heavy emphasis on teamwork, and very little on the individual. And then you've got the United States, where individualism is much more prominent. I'm not saying one's right, the other's wrong. It's just different. We have different inclinations, just the way we were raised. The people, the Bob Hope generation, lived through the Great Depression. And so they are very, very careful and conservative. There are some people that, you've got Warren Buffett, who is worth enormous amounts of money, and he's living in the same house he's lived in for all his life, I think. Anyway, he's very, very conservative. In order to attract more people into the U.S. Army, they had to target a group of people that were individualistic. And so that's where the slogan was, join the Army, be an Army of One. That makes no sense to other generations. But to those that are individualistic, they can relate to that. And so advertisers understand this. And it was impressed upon us that if we want to connect with people through our media efforts or through one-on-one visiting, we've got to understand how these different generations think, the different lingo, the language. And we've got people that represent all four. Why can't people be a part of what's going on? And we've got more people speaking now and going to other places, and I'm a big promoter of that. I believe in that. And that's why we have a speakers club tonight. I want, and I've dreamed and hoped that we could do this for some time. And one reason we opened up a church in Felsmar that's once a month, it gives our people a chance to be able to speak more often. There might be a chance to go to some of the churches up north, as well as one day I hope we get a church back in Fort Myers. I got a call from somebody a few days ago. It says, where's your church in Fort Myers? I want to attend. Got another, and so one day, another family that sent an email says, I've got three children, and I want to be in your church. That may, and we'll see if that happens. It's going to happen sooner or later. The numbers are going to change. I've told the people in Miami, I hope the day comes when our biggest problem is, do we go to AM and PM services? Because when you look at that whole expanse of 9 million people, or whatever it is, between Miami all the way down to Homestead, Pembroke Pines, Fort Lauderdale, and then Boynton Beach, and everything all the way up to West Palm Beach. That's a megalopolis. It's a lot of people, and they all can get WGN. And the person that called, or I'm sorry, that did the email, says, I want a place for my three children and myself. She says, I've been reading the literature for a long time. And sometimes it takes a long time for people to act on it. But the circumstances are changing. The more we can be ready, the more God can give to us, send our way. He doesn't, I don't believe, want to send anybody our way if we're dysfunctional, or if we are lackadaisical, or if we just flat out don't know what we believe and haven't reviewed the literature or anything. But why would we have gone this far and endured these many trials and this long in our lives and made commitments that we've made in order to bungle it at the finish line? It just doesn't make sense, and I think we all agree on that. So we have the opportunity to be able to do more than we've ever done. And people, in speaking, not that that's the only thing, but that is not to be discounted. And this is happening across the country, especially the eastern half of the country, where people are filling in holes, filling in slots. We're finding out that they can do a good job or even an exceptional job. And people scratch their heads and say, where were these people? Why weren't they given a chance? Why weren't they allowed to be a part of the team, to be a part of the effort? And so it's different. It's a different day. It's a different era. It makes me think of Revelation. Let's turn over there. Again, I keep emphasizing that whenever you have unity, you have activity, you have growth, you have God's Spirit at work. In Revelation 11 talks about the two witnesses that come on the scene in the end time. And that's a very, very traumatic time. And just before it is some very interesting comments. And I talked earlier about perspective. And Gerald Waterhouse had a lot of perspective. And he tried to make the events of his lifetime fit in Revelation 10 and 11. For example, it says in Revelation 10 and 11, verse 11, and he said to me, you must prophesy again before many peoples, nations, tongues, and kings. Up until now, the only person that really did this to any great extent was Mr. Armstrong and the people that supported him with the telecast and magazine and so on. And Mr. Waterhouse would talk about the fact that after the heart attack in 1978, Mr. Armstrong basically got a second wind, so to speak, figuratively speaking, and he was able to go again and visit different nations. That could be the fulfillment of it. Maybe it is. I don't know for sure. But if that isn't the fulfillment of it, could it be that now is going to be, when there's more unity than there even was in 79, 80, because thinking of the personalities and people, but that was a very, very big watershed time. It was one that led to some of the best years of the church. But we parallel all the good things today that happened then. It may be that we will have an opportunity to fulfill that verse prior to what you read in chapter 11 about the two witnesses. And it says in verse 4, when the seven thunders had uttered their voices, I was about to write, I heard a voice from heaven saying to me, seal those things up which the seven thunders uttered, and write them not. I don't specifically know what the thunders represented, but it very well could be information or an end-time work being done. But what I am saying here is there seems to be a withholding, a holding back. And we may see the end of that. We might see increased activity. And that's with virtually most of Florida not knowing who we are yet. We could become a household name. It says in Ezekiel 33 that the preaching and the end-time message would be like a lovely song that people would hear, and they would listen over the walls, it says, over the walls, and get information, talk about it among each other. And well, I'll just go over there. It's in Ezekiel 33. It says in verse 31, and they shall come to you as the people comes and sit before you as my people. They will hear your words, but they will not do them. That's true. Many won't. But at least they'll have the opportunity. And with their mouth they may show much love. Their heart may go elsewhere. Verse 32, and you are to them as a lovely song, as one that has a pleasant voice that can play well on an instrument, and they hear your words. And it may be that the articles and the telecast with the right people is quite refined, a message that nobody can gainsay and resist, that is very plausible. And even if they don't totally believe it, some will, many may not. And when it comes to pass, verse 33, and lo, it will come, then they shall know that a prophet had been among them. They'll know it's true. And they'll have seeds for the future. They will have hope. And they'll realize that if what was preached was true, that obviously the Christ is coming and there will be a resolution to the very difficult problems that occur down the road. So that can be very, very positive. And that may yet to be fulfilled. That means that the ministry will be busier than it's ever been before. It will mean that the brethren have the opportunity to be busier than they've ever been before, doing meaningful things, working with lives, and helping. And I think that people with the experience of the people in this room can help in a great way. Things have changed very fast when you think of where we were. When Victor Kubik was sitting there in an empty office, the only one in ministerial services, and other people, they didn't have very good connection with various parts of the country because they didn't know who was still here. They actually believed that all of Florida was lost. And I can remember explaining my trip to in December to them in Miami. I says, oh, we had 62 people there. And they says, really? And they just leaped out of their chairs practically. It was good news from a far country. Cold water to a thirsty soul. And they didn't know. Two-thirds out of Florida remained. I know this is difficult, especially for our youth, because they didn't create this. And many of our youth want to think as a group. They don't want to be divided. And they're being targeted, frankly. Around the country, and it was not their doing. It wasn't the doing of the members, but God allowed it. It wasn't even the doing of most of the ministry. It's coming back together, and I think that the fruits will show that, and I think that we will rebound, and I think that this will be a haven where our people really can not only feel good about or be glad to be a part of, but take in a proactive way ownership. You know, this is my church. I matter. I count. I can contribute. I'm as serious about my religion as my grandparents or whoever else is out there. You know, we need everybody. Everybody counts. Everybody matters. As long as we have the right approach. 2 Chronicles 7:14 says, if my people humble themselves, then I will hear them from the heavens. I see a lot of that. I see more people talking about fasting and things, not in some self-righteous kick, but because they really understand. Unless they're diabetic, you know, that's a good thing to do once in a while. Asking for God's help and for the help with the church, help with miracles, whatever it takes. And it's an act of faith, too. I would like for us to consider what happened in 2 Chronicles 20 with King Jehoshaphat. 2 Chronicles 20. Here again, it is so important that we understand our limitations and realize that it is God that does it. I remember in Mr. Armstrong's home, the one time I was there, and I asked him, did you ever think that the organization would ever get to be of worldwide proportions like it is? And immediately he says, oh, no. He says, I believed in, you know, vision, you develop your region, you try to expand it. Eventually, I saw this could be a national thing, and then from there was an obvious transition to bigger things. But he never envisioned it initially. Just, no. and he had no pretense about himself. One time, a minister in Pittsburgh introduced him for the sermon, says, "And now I introduce to you the head of the church, Herbert Armstrong," and he just went ballistic. He says, "I'm not the head of the church. That's a gross presumption. You know, Christ is." And he said, "I'd like to think that I had something to do with the church's activity of growth." But he says, "I couldn't have done it. Only God. Unless the Lord builds the house, the weary toil, builders toil in vain." So Jehoshaphat understood this. He was a king of Judah at a critical time. There was three huge armies that were converging on Judah, and Judah was just outmatched, outgunned. They were outmaneuvered. They were going to be surrounded. The kingdom of Moab and Ammon and Mount Seir sent armies to just knock it out of existence. And they felt helpless. And had Jehoshaphat not had his wits about him, perhaps they would have melted down in sheer panic. So in chapter 20 of 2 Chronicles, in verse 1, it says, "And it came to pass after this also that the children of Moab, the children of Ammon, and with them others besides the Ammonites, came against Jehoshaphat to battle. Then there came someone that told the king, saying, 'There comes a great multitude from beyond the sea on the side of Syria.' And Jehoshaphat feared and set himself to seek the Lord and proclaimed a fast throughout all of Judah." Somebody else would have said, "Well, let's count noses. Let's see if we, how many spears do we have? What kind of weapons can we muster? Can we contain them? Maybe we should attack first, or maybe we should fall back and hide in the hills." Instead, Jehoshaphat says the army might as well stand down. "We're going to fast." You know, either he was going to be very, very right or very, very stupid, because the nation hung in the balance. And so, verse 3, Jehoshaphat feared in a positive way. He set himself to seek the Lord, proclaimed a fast throughout all of Judah. And the Jews gathered themselves together to ask help of the Lord. Even all of the cities of Judah, they came to seek the Lord. And none too soon, because this army was just a day away. And Jehoshaphat stood in the congregation of Judah and Jerusalem in the house of the Lord before the new court. And he said, "O God of our fathers, are you not the God in heaven? Do you not rule over all the kingdoms of the heathen? And in the hand there is not the power and might, so that none is able to withstand you?" That's not a bad prayer for us in a time of need. To acknowledge how the power of God and say, "Here is a need," and you say in Matthew 7 and in Luke that another place is in my name, "Ask this thing and I will do it." And if it's a good thing and according to God's will, won't he do that? And you remind God of his will, or you ask God, "Would you please bless this congregation? Would you give us qualitative, quantitative growth? Would you help us to be able to be on more stations, more radio, or whatever it is, whatever availability there is, so that we live up to your calling and do what we were called to do, do a work and grow as a result?" You think God won't answer a prayer like that? When all the roadblocks were removed, and all the ministries together, and we're all wanting to go in the same direction, we'll see more requests, we'll see more growth. And finally, it's like after all these years, I do feel it's the best unity I have seen in my life. And whether that's accurate or not, you can talk to anybody that was at the conference, and they'll say, "It's very good." And people came back from the one we had, it was an emergency conference back in end of January, and said the same thing. Either that's a bunch of garbage and hot air, and we're just pulling the wool over people, or it's for real, and God's hand is active, and we're going to see more activity as time goes on. Because a lot of people say a lot of things over time. What is true? What is real? I don't feel, it's not my job to try to do a sales job and get you to have ownership in this. It's my job to present the facts as I understand them, that you should be able to independently verify so that you know it and you can see it and that you can be a part of the solution. This is a world that needs to have hope. And it's been jaded and cheated and abused There are people that are claiming that the end of the age is going to happen today. Is it today or Okay. Okay, so I was going to say if it was yesterday, I missed it, man. Today. Now that's sad in one sense because there are people that are going to be disillusioned. It's sad because then persecutors may say, paint everybody with the same brush and say, well, they're all a bunch of kooks. And that could shortchange their opportunity to actually believe a plausible message about the future and about hope for the future. So it's unfortunate. You know, that happened in back in 1844. William Miller made history by predicting the end of the age. And why would people do that when it says in Matthew 24 that no man knows the day or the hour? But it's a temptation. And so William Miller predicted that, and it didn't happen. He says, well, I was wrong. It isn't August 12th. It's going to be October. October is the month, and I think the 20th was the day. And nothing happened, and people quit their jobs, and they just sat up there on the hillside. They were idling and neutral. God wants people to move forward. He's not looking for land squatters. They're going to sit and do nothing. It's a time to do. It's a time to go forward. It's mentioned in somebody made the point that in Australia they have a coat of arms with a kangaroo on it, not because kangaroos live in Australia, but because a kangaroo is one that moves forward. It cannot go backward. It will stumble and flop over. It has three toes, and the way they are designed, they can hop ahead, but they can't retrogress. And the concept was woven into the coat of arms there because it was symbolic of the fact that their new nation was going to go forward. Well, here, Jehoshaphat was in trouble, and he knew it. He knew that Judah's demise was not too far away unless God intervened. He said, verse 7, are you not our God that did drive out the inhabitants of the land before the people Israel and gave it to your seed of Abraham, your friend forever? He's saying, you know, these pagan people do not that are not the ones to obey you, but our ancestors did, Abraham. He is very clever in this prayer because he knew better than to say, we have been so righteous and we have been pursuing you and putting out our false idols. He knew that that wasn't true. The beautiful thing is that God was willing to answer this prayer, not because they were perfect. They were far from it. Maybe they deserved some of this adversity. But the thing is that God is merciful. And as was stated in the sermonette, that's more important than judgment. And so he was willing to take an imperfect king and imperfect people and give them intervention. We can never work up perfection on our own. Only the blood of Christ can justify us. And humility is what works for us. It's the only thing, asking for God's help. At any rate, Jehoshaphat prayed this prayer. And he had the people, little children, everybody. And I think it made quite an impression. It was an impression of humility. And that is what attracts God's attention. Now, to this man, while I look, the one that's contrite of heart, Isaiah 66:2. So he was impressed. He was moved by this prayer and by this presentation of humility. And he intervened and miraculously arranged for the destruction of this great combined army. If we can remember that, let's go on over to Exodus 14. Exodus 14, where Moses was leading the Israelites up to the Red Sea. And here they were in that box canyon, the sea out in front of them, walls on two sides, and Pharaoh's army sweeping up behind. It was an almost hopeless situation. But Moses was not daunted by the circumstances. In verse 13, he said to the people, fear you not, stand still, and see the salvation of the Lord, which he will show you today. For the Egyptians whom you have seen today, you shall see them again no more. And I think that we can, verse 14, the Lord shall fight for you, and you shall hold your peace. That's what God is capable of doing. And you are familiar with the miracle of the crossing of the Red Sea. And there are miracles after that. see the salvation of the Lord. If we maintain the unity that is extended to us from the home office for the right reasons, we're trying and asking for God's help to multiply our efforts to do what we're called for in an appropriate way, we'll see the salvation of God, His hand at work. We will see some miracles too, and we could use some. It's great that we had a prayer request for somebody and doctors can't find anything wrong with him. Why not milk that for what it's worth? Why can't we repeat that 20 times? Why can't we ask for God to open up some doors in this country or things at half price, you know, to get a message out? The economy's down. Maybe the cost of doing the work will be down. I have to believe that our income will climb as more and more people see what's going on around them. What happens if we have, you know, when 9/11 happened, we had the congregations of churches across this country in many denominations fill up. But there's enough going on that just external pressure like that will wake people up and inspire them to take a second and a third look at things that they might have discounted or laughed at it earlier time. We need more people, I think, to be hired into Florida. We're dealing with a country in South America and the islands. We've got two congregations now in Jamaica and a congregation, I think, intact, 50-some-odd people in Trinidad, Tobago. And we're not trying to draw them away from whatever else they've committed themselves to, but it's they on their own volition. Or they've got a friend, they talk to other people, and then they contact. And there's some other areas in the Caribbean that we may see activity in. We've certainly got scattered brethren on a number of the other islands. And people coming out of the woodwork. People in Cleveland, about 8 from our former association, they're happily back in the fold. And that's happened in the last few weeks. And some that disappeared about 7 years ago. All the pastors say that they have new activity. Well, maybe not a lot yet, but that really gets your attention when you haven't had any. And then all of a sudden, all of your comrades, people, are saying the same thing. It's not accidental. It's not accidental. If we can have the same attitude that Jehoshaphat, imperfect as he was, had, or that Moses had, it was good enough for God to intervene. God was happy to do that. He's glad when we look to Him and acknowledge that He is the source of everything that's good, directly or indirectly. We don't want to idle and neutral, especially when things are moving forward. All these statistics I've had mentioned, renewing of the telecast, the renewal subscription, and then I never mentioned that we've revamped an already very good web page. Some of that's explained in here. And I've talked to people that know so much more about computer technology than I ever will that say that they are impressed, including this one person that I spent 4.5 hours with, and yet they're taking it to a much, much higher level, making it more interactive and giving people opportunity to do a lot of a communication with others in the church. And so we've hired extra people to beef up the IT support for the church to make that happen. All these things have happened in the last 2 months. What's going to happen in another 2 or 3 months? It's a moving target. An opportunity for things to grow. And in that time, when Joshua finally took the people through the promised land, God said, "Be strong and of good courage. Have that vision. Know that when the people are united, that good things happen." The other thing that was an admonition, and Moses said this before he died to the people, they had wandered about 39 to 40 years in the desert. They had returned to different places. You could say they were idling and neutral. But they spent a year, the second time at Mount Horeb, where they received the Ten Commandments, sometimes called Mount Sinai. And the Lord our God, just Deuteronomy 1 verse 6, "And the Lord our God spoke unto us at Horeb, saying, You have dwelt here long enough in this mount turn you and take your journey and go to the mount of the Amorites and to the places nigh thereunto, the plain and the hills and the vale in the south and by the sea, to the land of the Canaanites, to the promised land. In other words, you just can't sit here and do nothing. And for us, we have the opportunity to get behind a work that is going to move again. It may move faster than it's moved in a long time. And to garner results that we will need to be part of a follow-up team to welcome people, guide them, answer their questions, and encourage them. A lot of people who will come through this door are going to be needing encouragement, reassurance, knowing that there are answers to everything under the sun, every social issue there is. The answers are in the Bible and our literature. It's not the only place they could go, but it's a place that God would lead them to. And there's no turning back from that. Once we are more prominently known, it's interesting that Julius Caesar, when he landed his army in England, told them that they weren't going back. And if anybody doubted, he said, they could look over the cliffs of Dover at the ships who were on the shoreline. They had been set on fire. There was no turning back. And we made that agreement anyway at baptism. Luke 9:62, no man having put his hand to the plow and looking back is fit for the kingdom of God. And we're supposed to be seeking that first. Matthew 6:33. And so we, in doing a work, that helps us to pursue that goal. Because it takes vision. That's what the work does. It announces the kingdom of God. It tells the society that there's something better than the way things are now. We have the chance to provide answers to some of these issues. What is the worst enemy of the church? Is it liberalism? Is it heresy? Gnosticism? Paganism? Somebody suggested one time, it's not any of those, it's complacency. It's hard to be complacent in the church that can move. But if we hide our heads in the sand, or if we perpetuate what doesn't work, we could be complacent. I need to draw this to a conclusion. But what I see is the church becoming uncomplacent, avidly interested in doing a greater work than it's done in a long time, and to put all of our energy and effort moving in the same direction, like a horse drawing where you've got all the horses going all together. You can accomplish more. Instead of arithmetic growth, you have it more geometric. Andrew Carnegie one time made the observation, and he was one that gave away in today's money billions of dollars. His observation was the average person puts maybe 25% of his or her energy and ability into his or her work. He said the world will salute anybody that tries up to 50% of their potential. And he said, for the few that put out 100%, the world will stand on its head. And I think of the musicians that would practice 7 hours a day on a piano. Or Gary Player, Jack Nicklaus was the one who would spend hours at the golf range. Or Ted Williams, till his hands would bleed, swinging baseballs. You know, there's a lot of accolades for those that go that extra effort to put out and be at 100%. You know, the world will stand on its head if we approximate those kind of numbers with our spiritual activity. And Christ would want to know that about it as head of the church. I'll just refer to one other scripture over in Genesis 22, where after God had worked with Abraham, he says, I want you to leave the land of the Chaldees, and I want you to go to the land of Canaan. And that broke him out of a comfort zone. And then he tested him on many different ways, and sometimes he passed, sometimes he didn't. He told the Pharaoh that Sarah was his sister, when in fact Sarah was his wife, things of that nature. But for the most part, he was a man of God and the father of the faithful. And when he was asked and challenged to sacrifice Isaac, his son, when he was ready to do that, God intervened to prevent that from happening. And he said, I think it's in Genesis 22, verse 16, he said, now I know that you obey me, that you will hold nothing back from me, that you fear me. And later on he said confidently, Abraham obeys my commandments and keeps my laws. And because of that, he gets the birthright promises down the road, which we know have happened. I think that he's looked at a lot of the leadership of the church and allowed them to be in disfavor. Remember what Miss... Well, I won't go there. Anyway, I will go there. Mr. Holliday, when he was president, he endured a lot of grief, to put it mildly. And Mr. Keller's in one meeting said, I have to commend, the subject got around to this, and he said, that man never reviled or said anything negative about any of the others. He just quietly went about his business, and when he was told it was time to go back to a local area, he just did it. And other people that have had a rough road, and year would go after year, and the work was getting done to some extent, but everything wasn't lined up together. And so I feel that in addition to everything else that will unfold, God has said, now I know about these people. Now I'll give them the unity. I'll give them the money. I'll give them the more of the Spirit. I'll give them the opportunity to get more done. I think that from here on out, we're going to see greater activity. We've got to be ready for it. We've been sitting on a powder keg of excitement, and in a positive way. And when the church moves, hopefully we won't be chasing from behind saying, there they go, I got to keep up with them. With God's Spirit, we can be lockstep with each other, yielding ourselves, working on what we need to individually, whatever issues, problems, whatever. That's not the end of the world. But if we decide to idle and neutral or get into denial, then that is the beginning of big problems for us personally. Why do that? These statistics indicate something good. The unity at these conferences indicate something that God can bless. Things are different. Things are growing. Even the income after that crazy dip, things are better. And you will see it if you haven't already. And get yourself ready to do more. Ask God what He can do to use you in a way that you've never been used before. That would please God very much. And I have to do that too. That means moving out of comfort zones. It means changing. It means becoming closer to Him. It means living for more people. It means changing, getting rid of issues in our own lives. But wouldn't we want that anyway? So let us consider the words of Christ when He told some of the people that we heard about in the sermonette, when He answered questions, let's be about, as He said He was about, let us be about our Father's business.